I have lots of data, both experimental and numerical, to show. So this talk is going to be a talk with slides. Actually, it was almost a talk with newer slides, no blackboard, just a few minutes ago. But fortunately, things started to work. OK, so this is work that we have done with Claudio Chamón, Leticia Cubiandolo, and Malcolm Kenneth, who is now at Cambridge University. And basically, the question we are interested in is the following. There have been, in the last 10 years, 12 years, lots of experiments in glassy materials where people look at heterogeneity in the relaxation. Basically, the picture is that somehow different regions in your sample are relaxing at very different rates. And this has been a long-standing discussion in the glass field. But lately, we have much more direct experiments. There are many indirect experiments, like NMR, selecting molecules in particular way, and so on. But I'm going to show two of the most direct experiments. This is a visualization experiment with confocal microscopy in a colloid, which undergoes a glass transition. Here, all the particles are more or less the same size. These little blue dots that you see are also particles which have roughly the same size as these particles. The difference is that the particles that are highlighted are the 5% that are moving the fastest. So this shows that these particles are clustered in some region in the sample. So this goes in favor of this image of having regions that are relaxing faster than other regions. And another question that one might ask is, how long do these regions last? Are these regions more or less permanent? Are these regions, well, appear there and then disappear at a short time later, and so on? And this same group in other papers has shown that, well, they see these regions appearing in some place and then appearing in some other place in their sample. Now, an experiment that actually addressed this more. Well, they have 5% polydispersity. So they don't have like 80-20, things like that, but they have polydispersity and the system does go through a glass transition.
Just that they draw the ones that are moving fast.
Yeah, but the
small
dots,
the small dots
are particles which are roughly the same size as the others. The dispersion in the size of the particles is 5%. The only thing that this difference between this big ball and this little point shows is that this big ball is among the 5% of the particles that are moving the fastest.
The green and the blue.
Okay, the colors indicate particles that are clustered together. What they did was a construction to look at particles that are in contact with each other. Okay, so what they did is they have this cluster, and all the others that are not in those two clusters. So they have two big clusters, and then the others that are not in any of those two big clusters.
No, but then what are the green particles?
They're still moving fast.
They are still moving fast, but they are not members of these two clusters. Okay? So they recognize the large clusters, they give them individual colors, and then for all the others which are not in big clusters, they just use the same color. Okay? So, okay. So this is a super cool liquid, okay? And then this is another experiment which sort of addresses more directly this question of what happens in time with these heterogeneities. So this is an experiment with an AFM tip on top of a polymer glass, and basically what is measured is noise in the local dipolar moments that you have there. And what they do is they take spectra of the noise at equal intervals after quenching the system below the glass transition temperature. And you see that here, For example, immediately after quenching, you have a garden variety 1 over F to some power noise. But then after 2 hours of relaxing, you see that there is some strongly fractating region that has appeared under the tip, which produces this bulge. And then eventually, after some hours, this bulge disappears. So there is a fluctuation there, which has a time scale of the order of some hours. And actually, they have found many of these in this experiment. They have looked at the distribution of the times they survive. And they have found that actually the lifetime of these heterogeneities is of the order of the relaxation time for the same temperature. In this case, this system is actually in the glass side of the transition. It's 9 Kelvin below the glass transition temperature. Okay, so basically, the point here is that experiments show there are many more experiments. There are experiments that are more indirect, and since they are more indirect, there is a lot more interpretation involved, and then they are, of course, more controversial. But these are, I would say, probably the most clear experiments that show the heterogeneities. And so we see that in the experiments, and on the other hand, we don't really have a theoretical understanding of spatial fluctuations in glassy dynamics. So what I'm going to try to do is to try to combine some facts that we learned from the experiments and propose a picture that could help us understand this. So first of all, I'm going to show some phenomenology about age-dependent effects and fluctuation dissipation violations in glassy systems. So everything, all of this goes to the point that these systems are out of equilibrium. But more importantly for us, these ages are going to be very important, because the central point I want to make is that actually these heterogeneities have to do with the fact that the age in different regions of the sample is different. So that was not in the glassy regime, but okay, that's an important.
If you go into the glass, they actually lose all the clusters.
Okay, so let me go back to this.
There is
an important point here, which is that the lifetime of the heterogeneity is of the order of the relaxation time. So the point I want to make is that these are going to be non-equilibrium effects, and you have some relaxation time either on either side of the transition. Okay, you do have some relaxation time. And that in principle, you are going to see these kind of effects within that window of that relaxation time. And then once you relax, you are going to wash them out. Okay? So of course, there is this point.
Do you experience a Dixon turbine where they do the same measurements below the glass transition in a colloidal suspension?
Yeah, I mean, what happens in the original experiment is that they see a change in the distribution of sizes, but they still see the clusters. Okay, so they see like a step in the sizes that they see. Okay, so it's not that like the clusters disappear. Okay, anyway, so. So the picture here is going to be that we have something that is happening while the system is trying to relax, and that involves basically ages that are heterogeneous in space. So the first thing I'm going to discuss is a symmetry under time reparametrizations, which is going to justify this claim that it's easy to change ages for a glass. And this will have as a consequence that this will be a continuous symmetry that will give rise to a Gostom mode, which will be these space-dependent ages. And I'm going to discuss some numerical evidence for this Gostom mode, and some consequences related with the scaling of probability distributions with time. And then I'm going to talk about, well, some. To what point this picture breaks down a little bit, in the sense that this symmetry is not perfect, it only holds at infinite time. At any finite time, the action is going to have symmetry breaking terms that are going to give rise to a mass for this soft mode. So that's what I am planning to do. And So basically, you are all familiar with this picture where you have relaxation times that are growing very fast, and your glass transition is really a dynamical crossover. And what you know really is that as you keep going down in temperature, your relaxation times go from minutes to hours to days to years. Okay? So essentially, in any experimental time scale, your system cannot equilibrate. So again, what's the difference between a conventional material and a glass? In a conventional material, we have a short equilibration time. If we do an experiment, for example, we change some external condition, like temperature, and then we apply some field, and we sometime later we measure some quantity. If we apply the field, let's say, 10 seconds after changing temperature or 20 seconds, it doesn't matter as long as this time interval is the same, we get the same result, and this is called time translation invariance. So it's sort of trivial, simply saying that the state of the system here and here is the same. In the case of a glass, of course, we know that that's not true because our relaxation time is much longer than any experimental time we can be looking at. So as the system is relaxing, for example, if we do the experiment like this, the state of the system here is different from here because here it has relaxed a little further. So the response in this case is going to be different from the response in this case. Or if we look at correlations, spontaneous correlations of spontaneous fluctuations, they are going to be different too. So the system is not time translation invariant. Things do not depend on time differences, and this is what is called physical aging. There are many experiments that show this, and bear with me a little bit. Many of you are familiar probably with this, but first of all, for those who are not familiar with this, these are, for example, experiments in polymer glasses where the system has been quenched below the glass transition temperature, and then there was a wait of between 1 hour and 3 years. And depending on the weight before performing the experiment, one sees a different response. So the axis here is the time since you start applying an external disturbance to the system. And you see some response. And what you see is that the response when the system has aged more is much slower than the response when the system hasn't aged so much. And what you see is that the response keeps changing, okay, as you increase the weight in time, and there seems to be no sign of saturation. So the relaxation time in this case is much longer than 3 years. The other thing is that, well, this is not completely hopeless because we can actually shift all these curves and make them fall on top of each other by just shifting with something proportional to the logarithm of the aging time. So actually, this gives rise to an important point, which is that the behavior of this response is a dependence on the second time divided by the waiting time. So if we divide the time, the measuring time by the waiting time, we get this scaling curve here. So this is going to be useful later in the talk. So another example, in this case for a spin glass, not a structural glass. Again, if we let the system relax for different times, okay, we see that the relaxation becomes slower and slower the longer the waiting time. And again, we have, if we look at the position of these peaks, we see that essentially the position of this peak is proportional to the waiting time. So again, we have a scaling with t divided by the waiting time. So this is something that happens in many systems, but it's not really the only possible behavior. It's just very common, okay? Another issue that one can expect in a system that is not in equilibrium is violations of the fluctuation-dissipation relation that one should have in equilibrium. So in the case of a spin glass, we can look at correlations between the spin at the same point at two different times, and then responses to local magnetic field, local quenched magnetic field. And there is, this very well-known work by Leticia and Jorge Kurchan, where they looked at the mean field theory of spin glasses.
And what they showed was that there was a very particular form of the departure from the FDT. So the FDT would predict this linear relation between the integrated response and the correlation. And what they predicted was that one should have a correlation which, one should have a relation between correlation and response which is the same as in equilibrium for relatively short times where one has high correlation and low integrated response. And then eventually at the values of the correlation of the order of the Edwards-Anderson order parameter, one starts to see a departure. The way this departure goes depends on the model. It could be a straight line like in a P-spin model. There could be other ways, but another important issue here is that the mean field equations of motion are invariant for long times under reparametrization of the times. So if we take one solution of the equations of motion, which involves, for example, C of tt prime, and now we plug in h of t and h of t prime into the same functional form, where h is any monotonous reparametrization of the time, any function, we are actually obtaining another solution. And the only way to distinguish between all these degenerate solutions is by looking at the short time dynamics. That's what really picks one solution. So, this kind of violation of the fluctuation dissipation equilibrium form is seen in experiments. There is a beautiful experiment by Harrison and Osio in a spin glass where they see a departure like this in this same kind of plot. Okay, and I'm going to also use these kind of ideas in what follows. So another example of violation of the fluctuation dissipation relation, here is an experiment in glycerol. So here you can look at voltage noise and you can look at conductance. And normally you would have a relation between them given by the temperature of the system, but out of equilibrium, if you calculate that temperature, you get an effective temperature which is different from the environment temperature. The environment temperature is 180 degrees. Will be this, okay? So this region here corresponds to the quasi-equilibrium regime that I was talking about here, okay? Where the later time and the waiting time are close to each other, and then this region here corresponds to having an effective temperature, a slope here, which is different from the environment temperature. So, well, this is well known, so the point I want to make is the following. Can we understand dynamical heterogeneities? And the idea would be to say, okay, let's take aging that we know exists in all these glassy systems, and let's take this reparametrization invariance that has been seen in the dynamics of mean field models, and let's see if we can somehow generate an age that is space dependent, that is fluctuating in space. So that would be the central take home idea of this talk. So let me go deeper into this. So again, we have this chi-psi plot, and reparametrizations of the time would basically have to do with, if one has a trajectory of the system, the trajectory goes from this point and evolves along this line at some rate. So if we do a reparametrization at a given pair of times, instead of being here, for example, the system will be here or here. So it will be falling behind or going further along. Now, so we know that this holds to mean field level. One thing that we did was to see that actually this not only holds to mean field level, but if we do the Martin Cisler Rose approach, we get an action for the system. Actually, the action is invariant under these reparametrizations, and the measure in the generating functional is invariant under these reparametrizations. Okay, so this means that the symmetry not only applies to the saddle point, but it applies to the fluctuations. Okay, so this is very analogous to what happens for the equilibrium of a ferromagnet. In this case, well, some ON model where we have rotations, any rotation leaves the free energy, any rotation of the magnetization configuration leaves the free energy unchanged. So we have some Mexican hat potential, okay, with some symmetric minimum, and in principle our magnetization can point anywhere in this symmetric minimum. And so this would be basically the analogy I want to make, although this of course is a dynamical problem, a non-equilibrium problem. So let me go one step further. In the case of my continuous ferromagnet, I can generate fluctuations with high probability just by smoothly rotating my spins from point to point. So I have my spins pointing up here, then I have them slightly slanted, and these are my magnons, right? So these are smooth variations of direction with position. And in this case, what I'm going to say is, well, the analogous object will be to have smooth reparametrizations in space. And the physical interpretation of this would be that the age of the material varies smoothly. Okay, so again, what I'm saying is I have this symmetry. This symmetry makes it easy to have these smooth space variations, and therefore these are going to be the fluctuations that are going to be dominating in the non-equilibrium dynamics. So this is the central point, and now what I'm going to do is basically to hammer on this and try to convince you that there is some evidence actually that this picture works. So one thing that one could do would be to make simulations in some model that shows glassy behavior, and basically look at what happens with local quantities, correlations and responses. So for example, if I go back to my ferromagnet, okay, and I do a simulation in my ferromagnet, what I expect if I look at coarse-grained magnetizations here, I will mostly see my magnetizations fluctuating along this curve. So these are the transverse fluctuations. I am not going to see a lot of longitudinal fluctuations. There will be an anisotropy in the fluctuations that I can see if I do a simulation. So what I'm going to try to look for in my simulation, in my dynamics of a glassy system, is for this anisotropy, to have fewer longitudinal fluctuations and more transverse fluctuations. If I find isotropic fluctuations, that would be an indication that the picture doesn't work. So sure enough, we went and did Monte Carlo simulations in a short range, three-dimensional spin glass with plus minus J interactions at the temperature of 70-something percent of the glass transition temperature. This is the size. And what we do is the following. We look at the correlation response plot, and these regions here show the region that contains two-thirds of the probability of finding the C-chi pairs for regions in the sample. So for times T and TW that are close to each other, we expect to have a behavior that is close to the FDT line. So we have here not much fluctuations, okay? And the fluctuations are more or less isotropic along the FDT line. So that's what we expect. And then what we expect is that this is going to depart from this FDT line, and it's going to depart along the line given by the chi-C curve. The chi-C curve here is shown by these crosses. Okay, we obtain the crosses by looking at the global quantities in the same simulation. So we look at the global correlation and the global response in the same simulation. And sure enough, what we see is that most of the fluctuation is along the chi-C curve, and there is much less fluctuation perpendicular to the chi-C curve. So we have the fluctuations that dominate are transverse fluctuation, and we don't have so many longitudinal fluctuations.
So, can you explain why in the region that they satisfy FDT?
Yes.
have the more isotropic fluctuations. It's because I haven't broken that symmetry, what you're saying.
Right, the symmetry only holds at long times, so I have a soft direction only when I am at really long times. Long time differences, yeah. I really, here I don't really have any soft direction still. Okay? So basically here I still have my fast part of the action that is playing a role in really keeping the things together. Okay? So, and this goes back to the point that the fast part of the action was actually what chose one particular reparametrization at the global level. Okay, so we have this behavior, and it really agrees well with what we expected. Now we can do a little bit more than this. If you see, just because of the fact that our effective temperature is higher than the temperature of the environment, that means that this slope is relatively low, we have more fluctuation in the direction of the correlation than in the direction of the response. So it's interesting to look at the fluctuations in the correlation alone, and that's something that we have done too. So what you can see there are histograms of the values. So these are local values of the correlation, their probability, okay? And this, each plot corresponds to a pair of times t weighting and t. So t weighting is the weighting time, t is the second time. And what you see is that the plots that correspond to the same ratio of t over t weighting fall on top of each other. So for example, in this case, this corresponds to 10,000 Monte Carlo sweeps with 40 weighting and 20,000 for T. For one of the curves, the other curve is 40,000 with 80,000, okay? So the times are different, but the ratio is the same, and we find that the curves coincide. So this goes back to the observation that I made before, that in many examples of aging, you actually see that the global quantities go with the ratio between the two times involved. And so, well, this is intriguing, and we want to try and see if we can understand this. So let me try and see if we can understand this in terms of the picture we are proposing. So let's assume for the moment that the global correlation has this approximate form. So we are proposing that the fluctuations are given by these reparametrizations of the time, and since we are going to be dealing with ratios, it's convenient to write this in terms of an exponential of some variable of some fluctuating variable phi. So this object, this space-dependent object that we wrote as some fixed function of the variables now replaced by space-dependent reparametrized times, is going to have the ratio of the times, because this is the form of the external function. And now we replace this by the exponential, so we have something like this. So this looks a lot like some function of the difference between two heights, right? These two heights, phi at time t and phi at time tw. So it's tempting to think of this as a theory of random surfaces fluctuating with a drift. The drift would be simply the fact that this hr of t has to be close to the time, the actual wall clock time. We have small fluctuations around that in principle. Okay, so this phi r of t should be something like the logarithm of t plus some fluctuation. Okay, so basically this logarithm of t would be some drift term, and this fluctuation would be something that is performing a sort of random walk. Actually, if we write the simplest possible action for this object phi that satisfies the symmetries and is consistent with this form for the global correlators, and we make the assumption that these fluctuations are not too big, then we actually get this description of a drift plus a random walk. So yes.
So what do you expect in the limit of t goes to infinity? This becomes a straight line or something?
No. You have, oops.
What happens?
Right. You have fluctuations. You have fluctuations of these surfaces, and the size of the fluctuations are growing with a random walk, which is in the logarithm of the time. I'm going to show you exactly this. This is the next transparency. This is, I think, that's probably what you are asking about. So you have this drift term here, and then you have some fluctuations that you can write as some random variable which has a fixed probability distribution, okay, with a prefactor that is growing with the logarithm of the ratio of the times. So this is, I mean, for a regular random walk, you would have a square root of whatever the time is, but what we have here is that the time is really logarithmic, okay, and that was because of having this behavior here, okay? So it's sort of, so what we are saying is we learn from that what was the good reparametrization, the one that was chosen by the system, and we expand around that one. That would be basically the idea. So, yes?
Is there monotonic in time? Or
say that again?
Is H monotonic in time?
We are assuming that it's monotonic in time, yes. So, and in principle, this is consistent with that because you see that the drift term is larger than the fluctuation. Okay? So the assumption is self-consistent. Now, here again, we are making some assumptions, we are getting some consequences out of that. And
square root of A times the random variable.
Say that again?
T is close to TW.
No, we are thinking of well-separated times. This is really for well-separated times because you see this goes back to the question by Bulbul. We are not really looking at this regime where the two times are close to each other. We are really looking at this regime where the times are well-separated. So where we have, you see, this regime here corresponds to T over T weight in 1 plus some small epsilon. And really the regime we are interested in is when T over T weight in is 2, 8, 32, you know, really big values. Okay? So, and I mean, if we want to really, okay, I mean, the issue of how to go from the short time behavior to the long time behavior is really tricky. Even if you do mean field theory, as if you could ask Leticia, it's really complicated. So we are not claiming that we understand that part. So let me see. I was there, so I said that there was a drift and a random walk, and then okay. So basically, we are making this assumption that we have a drift plus a random walk and that we don't have fluctuations that are too large. And by making those assumptions, we get this kind of prediction for the behavior of these random surfaces. Now, this XR here, as I was saying before, this sort of gets all the time dependence out. These are random variables which will depend on position, times, and so on, but the probability distribution is the same for all positions and all times. And they could be correlated and so on, but we don't care in this case because we are just looking at the probability distribution of one of these objects. Okay? So if we try to decombolt from the simulations, we try to go back and say, okay, if I have a correlation like this, where are my random surfaces? I use this expression here, okay, and I take the simplest possible assumption for the value of the C0, which would be some power law, okay. So this is a crude assumption, and it's just made to see if I can understand something from the simulation. Well, what you see is that you deduce the value of the XR. So the variable that will be here will be the XR. Basically, what you do is you subtract this shift, you divide by this prefactor, okay, and you try to recover this random variable XR. And you obtain the probability distribution. And what you see is that you can not only find the scaling with T over T weighting when T over T weighting are the same, but you can actually superpose all the probability distributions, which reinforces what we are saying here, that this XR has the same distribution for all positions and times. So this is not perfect scaling, but again, the analysis, the going from the numerical data to this curve has a lot of assumptions, and in principle it could be improved if we knew the details better. Okay, so up to here I have ignored completely the correlations in space. I know that there are fluctuations in space. I'm just looking at what one point does independently of all the others. Okay, now I'm going to try and probe the space dependent, the correlations in space. And basically, there is an important point. And when we obtain this result of the invariance and the reparametrization of the generating functional, this was done by looking at the action, performing an RG in time, and looking at the terms that survived for very long times. Okay. So that means that we are ignoring the terms that are irrelevant for long time scales. Now, for any finite times in your simulation, those terms are present. And these terms, going back to the discussion of what happens for short time separation, are the terms that break the symmetry that choose a particular reparametrization for the global system. Okay, so this will be a little bit analogous to now taking your magnetic system with continuous symmetry for the spin and adding a small magnetic field, which pins your magnetization. So one effect is to have the magnetization pointing in one direction. The other effect is that your magnons now acquire a mass. Okay. So then what you expect is, instead of having the naive power local relations that you would expect from the Goldstone mode, you actually should have a finite correlation length, and this correlation length should be diverging in the infinite time limit. So I'm going to look at simulations from that point of view, and here what I look at are the correlations at two different points. So this is the correlation between the same spin at two times at point ri. This is the correlation between the same spin at two times at point ri plus r. The fluctuation of this object with respect to the space average, and then the correlation between the two points averaged over space. So what I see here is that This object is really exponentially decaying in space. This is a logarithmic scale, okay? So you really see exponentials here, okay? The correlation length depends on the pairs of times that you are considering, and you see in particular that as you take longer and longer times, you go to longer and longer correlation lengths, okay? So let me see what we can say about this correlation length. And here I'm plotting basically all the data we have. So what we see, first of all, is that if we plot this as a function of the product of the two times, the correlation length indeed increases. It increases very slowly, but it increases. The other thing that we see is that if we take T over T weighting, which is relatively small, we have a curve which is well separated from the others, but when we increase this ratio, we go to essentially a collapse of all the curves for large T over T weighting ratio. So this basically gives you the idea that there might be some boundary terms that we really don't. Let's put it this way: so there may be some short-range interactions in time that we really don't really understand very well. But if they are well separated, there is maybe a simpler. If the times are well separated, there is maybe a simpler behavior. Let me show you also that this is not. So again, here this shows that this correlation length is really just a function of the product of T times TW. If we try to plot this in a similar way, but now looking at it as a function of just one of the times, we see that there is really no collapse. Things keep changing as I change the ratio of the times. So it looks like here the good variable is T times TW. We can actually propose some behavior of this correlation length with time. One way to fit it would be to say that it goes logarithmically with the products of the times, which is this blue curve here, or as a power law with a small power, which is this red curve here. Both seem consistent, and it's difficult to make a distinction with a relatively small change in the correlation length. The other thing is that these data are consistent with the expectation that this mass, so now the mass, the inverse of the correlation length, is going to zero for very long times. So of course it's consistent, but we cannot really exclude some other behavior. One could, for example, have an extrapolation where it goes to a finite mass, and that cannot be really excluded completely. So, well, bottom line, we can do an RG in time and show that in short-range spin glasses, the dynamical action is invariant under global time reparametrizations at long times. This gives rise to proposing the presence of Goldstone modes, which will be associated with fluctuations in the age in different regions in the sample. We propose that these are the high probability modes in the dynamic. These modes give rise to a distribution of these pairs of local values for correlation and response that is concentrated on a fixed curve chi of C. We see that in the simulations. We also see that as we expect for global correlations going like the ratio of T over TW, the distributions of the local correlation collapse for fixed T over TW, and actually we can rescale all the distributions. And the other thing is that what happens due to the terms that are irrelevant at long times but are present at any finite times, these terms give rise to an exponential decay of the correlations of the noise in space. This is actually what we see. We see a correlation length that grows slowly with time, a correlation length that seems to be just a function of T times TW. And this growth of the correlation length, or this decay of the mass, seems consistent with the mass going to zero and at infinite times, but it's not really conclusive from the data we have. By the way, there is a little bit of uncertainty in this fits for the correlation length. One could look at the data maybe in a slightly different way and get a slightly larger correlation length. So there are, of course, a lot of details there. And again, I guess the central point here is to think if this framework can be applied to other glassy systems like structural glasses. See if we can look at systems where we don't have quench disorder coarsening, see if we have the same phenomenology or not. And in principle, this would be a way of looking at the data from local experiments and trying to analyze those data from local experiments that we are having more and more right now, and see if we can make some more sense of these results. Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Thank you, time for comments or questions.
Yeah.
So this correlation length, which is growing as a function of time. Right?
Of time,
suppose
yes.
Suppose I was above the glass condition, so my aging is going to get interrupted.
Yes, exactly.
What would I see?
Well, that's I guess I would see what you were discussing in your talk, right? You would see the expectation again would be to see the correlation length growing up to time scales which are of the order of the relaxation time, okay? And basically, what you were discussing, I actually don't know if you discussed it in your talk or we discussed it privately, but this issue of a correlation length that grows in time and then the final correlation length that one measures depends on how close or basically depends on the temperature, because this cutoff time given by the relaxation time is getting longer and longer as one lowers the temperature. This is probably something that we would predict from this framework, because basically the idea is as long as the system has not equilibrated, we can look at it from this point of view, we can see this growing correlation length, and then eventually, well, that stops.
But some waiting time that will stop. At a waiting time, which is comparable.
Well, the two times really, right? The T and the T waiting.
I also think the waiting time has a natural cut, right? About the
Basically, to show this, you have to do some RG procedure. The equilibration time or the relaxation time is the infrared cutoff. So you cannot go beyond that.
Yeah.
But I'm saying, so if I have that, you guys have a way of understanding what might happen beyond that.
Well, the time would be a function of T minus T waiting only.
So the
waiting time will disappear.
So I'll have this dependence as a function of T times TW all the way up to this cutoff, and then beyond that.
It's a little bit like coarsening, right? In the case of coarsening, you have all these non-equilibrium dynamics, but eventually you have all your system in one domain, and then you have your equilibrium dynamics, right? So it's more or less like that.
Yeah, but it's not the same about the transition. So.
It's not the same in what sense? Oh, you mean above the transition in coarsening? Yeah, but the point here is that you have this relaxation time, which is always there, and the system, you can in principle always look at it as being out of equilibrium before you get to that relaxation time, right?
This correlation length that we are defining, if you look at it above the transition, say where the system is able to equilibrate, is very much related to these 4 points
that people
have been talking about. The extra feature here is that since we are extending these to the low temperature phase, where there is a waiting time dependence, we have to take into account.
Right.
But if you go back to the high temperature phase, say,
it should be the fourth.
And it's a function of the time difference only as.
So our prediction for that would be that this length should be increasing as you lower the temperature. That 4 point equal time length should be increasing.
Can you go back to that slide that you showed five?
Yes. This one or the next?
This one. I mean, if you go horizontally, is the correlation length that you discuss govern this fluctuation, because the fluctuation along the R direction?
The R direction, yes. Yes.
So when the time becomes larger and larger, the correlation length becomes larger and larger, does it mean that this line becomes flatter?
that this line becomes flatter. No, on the contrary, because what you have is you have power law correlations. Okay, you go from an exponential decay of the fluctuation to a power law. So I wouldn't really say it's flatter.
Right, okay. But if the length of, become more and more correlated, right? Because correlation length increases.
The fluctuations get more and more correlated. So you can right. So yeah, I mean, for example, when you have logarithmic correlations in a random surface, you can have very big departures, okay, from some mean value, right? Because you keep growing, okay. So it's not, I mean.
But the wavelength becomes longer and longer.
No, but the thing is, you can keep again as Bulbul was suggesting, you can keep moving in the same direction if you want. You can keep fluctuating in the same direction. Okay, in the if you have a very short correlation length for the fluctuations, it's like you go in one direction and then you go in the other and so on, and you never go very far. Right. Right, but then if you have correlated fluctuations, it's like you can have a strong departure because.
It could be a tilted line, but it's still.
But then you get it's you get something like this, right? You get.
If your velocity remains correlated for a long time, you propagate in the same
direction. Right, this is the same thing, right? You can go like this and. Sort of depart a lot and so on. Instead of having something like this,
yeah, it should become smooth.
Yes. Smooth, but with big departures.
Yeah.
That's fine. Yeah.
I think you agree. Yeah. Any more questions or comments? No, let's thank people one more time.
Thank you.